galaxy divided. Striking swiftly after the Battle of Geonosis, Count Dooku's droid army has seized control of the major hyperspace lanes.
Welcome to the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, Star Wars Retrospective Series.
Might I remind you that this was not your mission?
Join Garrett.
So, what's the plan?
Oh, I thought you were the one with the plan.
No, I'm the one with enthusiasm.
Matt.
Some people are just happier when they're miserable.
And Adam.
Being a Padawan is harder than I thought.
As they review each film in the Star Wars saga.
Have fun.
Search Your Feeling, podcast listeners.
How predictable.
The Percolated Media Star Wars Retrospective begins now.
Shall we continue?
My pleasure.
Star Wars The Clone Wars, released August 15th, 2008. Budget on this was $8.5 million. Box office $68.3 million. And this was directed by Dave Filoni. People thought that we were going to just finish the prequel trilogy and be done. And we've gotten comments on some reviews saying, why do they do stuff like Star Wars and then just drop it for a while? People, there are plans for all of it. We had plans to get back to it eventually. And those plans actually kind of got throttled, didn't they, Matt? This is actually being done a little sooner than we were expecting originally.
I don't remember exactly when we were supposed to do this, but to peel the curtain back, we, being me, do the schedule far out in advance, and then the other two schmucks just say, yeah, it's good to go, or they bitch about it. It's one of those two. And I think I had this slated to close the year, but we either something got delayed, which has happened numerous times between all the various projects that we have in the pipeline. So this full intent was to finish it this year, but we're actually going to be closing out, quote-unquote, Star Wars earlier than expected to accommodate some new releases getting changed. I think that was the big reason. Oh, I remember exactly why. It was the John Wick spinoff getting punted.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And there was one other one that was going to be, it might have been the Lord of the Rings animated movie that's supposed to be coming out. I think that got delayed.
Yeah, there's been a number this year really took a beating.
Yeah, I mean, and there's something that got delayed to next year that actually has given us the inspiration to put it on the schedule for next year when it initially wasn't. So there is some positives, I will say, and excitement going into our upcoming slate. But I'm not going to tell you what we're doing next year that got added. We'll save that for much, much later.
Yeah, definitely save that for sure. But, you know, I mean, look, it's a busy year for us because we have Planet of the Apes, which took obviously way longer than, you know, your normal series because it has, what, 8 or 9 movies or something. And
10.
Wow. And Matt and I, we just finished Mad Max. And so we are going to get back to Star Wars eventually. And I have a feeling next week's movie is going to be the one everybody's looking forward to. But we can't go without doing this one because this one did get a big theatrical release in 2008. I remember it very well. I did not see it in theaters. I waited to watch it. I don't remember exactly why I watched it. I think it was because I had an inkling to maybe watch the series. So I popped this on, and so I'd only seen it one time before this actual viewing. Now, Adam, You kind of went into this when we did Revenge of the Sith, but why don't you get into this again? Clone Wars, what's its origin? Starting with the 2003 miniseries that they did.
Yeah, so you had the micro series that was put out, and there's two DVDs that encompass it, and they were pretty much a Cartoon Network, and Disney Channel existed, and I think Disney XD did at the time as well, but they were a Cartoon Network micro series of like 2 to 4 minute episodes, about 5 minutes, because they still had a pre and post credit. And those were telling some tales from the Clone Wars. It expanded on what we knew of characters like General Grievous and some of the other Jedis that got severely cut out of Revenge of the Sith. Some of the ones that you see when Order 66 happens. So it was kind of a, hey, let's give them some do, let's show some stuff. And also, what you really saw was Mace Windu, Yoda, and some of the other Jedi we really come to know, kind of showcasing what they could do with Jedi skills and fighting. And it was done in a very, almost like Samurai Jack animated, you know, style. And it was really something that, as small as it was, found a huge devotee audience that loved it. I mean, it wasn't a huge following, but it was definitely a cult following, and it grew and grew and grew. And with that, George Lucas was kind of like, I think I can tell some more stories in the middle of the stories that were before the stories I already told. So as he keeps, God damn it, fucking bust out Kermit. As he wanted to do, he goes back and was like filling in gaps because he's like, I can tell stories during the war. And it wasn't supposed to be focused on Anakin and Obi, and that it was supposed to be some of the lesser known Jedi. And the person who really is, he's known for spearheading it, but he was one of many, at least at the beginning. Even on this one, it bugs the fuck out of me, by the way, when Filoni's credited for directing this, because he kind of edited it together, but this is four episodes combined into one.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hey, guess what you're getting from Moana 2, people? You're getting a TV series that was edited into a movie, and that's what they did with this. So Filoni, who was brought over from, I want to say it was Avatar, The Last Airbender,
yes,
and Lucas's kids were huge fans of it, and Lucas had seen some of that through there. Yeah, it was that. Yeah, yeah. Because he tells a good story of getting a phone call, and George Lucas wants him to come work on a Star Wars animated series, and he thinks he's being punked and hangs up on him, I think, two or three times before he realizes it might be serious. I mean, at this time, there was nothing like this. You know, we had heard for a long time about a Star Wars TV series. We assumed it was going to be a Star Wars live-action series, and it took another 15 years before we would start to get those, and this was how they decided to kick it off. This movie, I gotta say, and it's important to get it up front, because people argue about this, it was not created as a movie. These episodes were pulled out, put together to create a movie to kick it off.
Like I said, I was not paying attention to the Star Wars lore on TV at all around this time, and I remember when this was coming out, I remember thinking, well, maybe I'll see that, and then it just went by, and, you know, this did not do very well. For Star Wars thing to be released, it was the first one to make under $100 million. And,
you know what was, sorry to cut you, you know what was massive though? Not just the expanded universe, we've talked about that before, but games like Battlefront with these characters where you could play the wars of Star Wars. Those were, and are still to this day, massive money makers for Lucasfilm games, Star Wars, whoever's putting them out on whatever given year. And that kind of seems like a great impetus for this, because those really helped keep Lucasfilm afloat during some of those dark times.
Matt, as a non-Star Wars fan, when this was out, you were, a teenager around that time. Were you into this at all?
I could give no fucks when this was coming out. I knew there was going to be an animated Star Wars movie. I did not like that it was set in the prequel universe, because I felt like it was time to, if we were going to go back to Star Wars, I wanted to see either really far back in the past, like the Knights of the Old Republic games, or I wanted to see the sequel post Return of the Jedi. When I heard this was going to basically serve as a pilot for the TV show, which it is for all intents and purposes, that gave me more pause for concern. But I had a friend who went to San Diego Comic-Con when they premiered this, and they had the panel talking about it. He kind of compared it to when Avatar The Last Airbender first made its way onto Nickelodeon. And obviously Dave Filoni has his roots there. He directed most of the first season, which is the makes up the Shyamalan movie that he desecrated shit on and left in the desert. That's his. And Avatar started out, when they put out the first couple episodes, I was like, okay, I love the art style, but it's not really gripping me. And it wasn't until probably about halfway through the first season that it clicked, and I think Avatar, next to Batman the Animated Series, I would consider the greatest animated show of all time. I kind of feel the opposite way about this movie comparing it to Avatar, where when I saw the trailer, I hated, I rebelled, to use a Star Wars term, against the art style. I thought it looked ugly. I was like, why did they take Team America marionettes and put them in Star Wars and just cut the strings? It doesn't really appeal to me. The story, that when I read the synopsis, I'm like, okay, this sounds dumb. But much like Avatar, this show, I think, is one of my favorite things in the entire lore of Star Wars. Full disclosure, though, it does take a while to get its ass in gear. I think the first season's pretty rough, but once you get to, like, season 3 and 4 on, I think it's some of the best, in my opinion, the best Star Wars you can find.
Yeah, I heard the first two seasons of this are pretty rough to get through.
And much like Matt, I got to say that I was, when it comes to expectations, I wasn't looking forward to this whatsoever. And guess what? This is my first watch now, and that's with, I'll get into the series a little bit, but I'll get into some of it now. The Clone Wars and the series, I think that is some of the best and some of the worst of Star Wars. I think much like X-Men, the animated series, you have arcs that are amazing, and you have a metric fuck ton of filler of characters that I wish I had never seen, but you can get together three or four episodes and be like, oh my god, this is amazing. In fact, the final four episodes of the Clone Wars series is some of the best Star Wars anything, period. Kind of wish we were doing that along with this. Yeah. But also because I...
The last four, not the first four. Last four.
But because I loved that micro series so much, like, man, I rebelled against this because I went, you know what? You're going to take what was special and minute in a cult following that was different, and you're just going to paint with colors and try to put it out to a mass audience. And I felt they were kind of using something that was original to just put another everyday Saturday morning cartoon up. So because of that, and what I felt was a ignoring of the micro series, I wanted nothing to do with this for the longest time.
There's two more things I want to mention. Number one, this summer was so packed. We've talked about this. Iron Man, Dark Knight, Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. Tropic Thunder, mm-hmm. Pineapple Express, Hellboy 2. I think there was just Mamma Mia, because that made a shitload of money. I think this just got lost in the shuffle. It came out at the tail end of the summer. Star Wars, I think because it was animated, people scoffed at it as, oh, this is disposable crap, and some people still hold that opinion. But the other thing is, this is sort of the opposite of Mask of the Phantasm and Teen Titans Go to the Movies, where those shows were already established, and they got theatrical movies. This is the lead-in for a show that should not have gone to theaters. And I do think that knowing this is a compilation of four episodes hurt the general reception, where it's like, you know, this is not something that I could or should pay to go see in a theater, especially when you're seeing The Dark Knight and Iron Man, or even Crystal Skull. I like that, as we talked about, much more than most people do, well, the first half. This had a lot going against it.
Yeah, and it definitely, even as the huge fan myself, it didn't get me in theaters to see it either. I do find it interesting, though. I mean, whether he deserves to be credited or not, Dave Filoni is still associated with Star Wars to this day. Disney picked him up, and he's a spearhead behind many of the shows that we see from Disney, Star Wars related, to this day.
I mean, I'll give him this. He's sort of become the Kevin Feige equivalent of Star Wars, but the difference is he writes and, you know, directs. He's really involved in the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's really good. Some of it, I think, is hot garbage, but I think that's also just when you've got your fingers in so many pies. I mean, if you look at all the... It's not just this. You look at the whole Disney Plus era of live-action Star Wars. I think he's been involved in almost every show except for Andor. I know more about the Clone Wars and the live-action stuff than I do most... if I was to pick a Star Wars era, I would consider myself the most knowledgeable about it's that kind of stuff. Not to say that I love everything, but that's when, you know, Christian and I got together around the time The Mandalorian was coming out, maybe a little bit before... I think the first movie we saw together, one of the first movies we saw together was Force Awakens. So.
Oh, interesting.
And we had very different reactions. So I'll say as a preview, we had very different reactions to all three of the every Disney live action movie, the three, Solo and Rogue One, we were on opposite ends every single time, and they made for very awkward car rides home.
We're going to make some great podcasts on our end once we get to those.
Yeah, definitely. I think that we're going to have some awkward conversations about those once we get to those, too. And yes, we are doing Episode 7, Episode 8, and Episode 9. And yes, we are doing Rogue One and Solo.
And also,
look,
we did the Ewok movies. We had to do this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this got a theatrical release. It is a official theatrical Star Wars movie. So, yeah, we're going to get to this no matter what.
Before we get into that, you know who was most excited about me sitting down to watch this and do this podcast? Were both of my kids.
Laura?
No, God, no. My younglings. Alex and
really?
Alex and Madison both. They live for the Clone Wars. Even more than Rebels, and they love Rebels, and so do I. And they love The Bad Batch, which is kind of spun out of this in a way. If people haven't watched Bad Batch, get through the first three episodes, and it is phenomenal. But my kids fucking live and die by the Clone Wars. This is their Star Wars.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, and this is the, for the record, Rebels is basically the what this is to the prequels. Rebels basically fills in between 6 and 7. It's post
maybe, Return of the Jedi. Maybe come to hate Freddie Prinze Jr.
Which is funny because I think it's only one of the only things I like him in.
I like him in it. I just hate how he thinks that he knows more about Star Wars than anybody anymore.
Well, to be fair, Dave Filoni has that same problem.
Yeah, that's true.
And I looked at him, I'm like, he looks like Fat Robert Rodriguez, for the record.
He does!
With that stupid cowboy hat.
I don't know how in that episode.
Funny, Robert Rodriguez would direct. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, well, speaking of Star Wars, we should probably get into this movie, because I don't think this is going to be that long of a discussion.
I think our build-up to it is probably going to be longer than the plot summary, honestly.
Well, that's the problem. You know, right up front, this is a movie where it's four episodes stitched together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because of that, the plot is, you know, I'll say up front, it is the apprentice. It is the Padawan to the action.
We start off with some chaos ensuing through just sound. Like, we're hearing things go on, but there's nothing on screen. Right before the Long Time in a Galaxy Far, Far Away title card shows up. Then we get the Clone Wars title, but no crawl. Just a narrator yelling, "Galaxy Divided," as he gives us a synopsis of what has happened since the Battle of Geonosis. This first Star Wars movie did not have a crawl, and I'm not sure if I like the alternative any better. the narrator here.
This is consistent with what the show would do. A lot of the times it would open with some form of narration. The difference is this sounds like one of those World War II radio announcers. And it's really off-putting, and I don't think it fits at all.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What this does, and yeah, the majority, if not all of the episodes, at least arcs, start off with basically a newsreel is kind of what it sounds like that you'd go to in the theaters. You know, it'd be like, you know, across the Pacific, our boys are at war. They're fighting the Nazi bastard. And that's kind of how the episodes kick off, because it's a war reel. And I think it goes back to that serials love that George Lucas has, and I got no doubt this was his want of going back into the movie theaters as a kid and taking the little short reels. I don't mind it, but it's because I knew this was coming, and I do think it was important to differentiate itself from the Skrull. But I get your point. If you're like, what the fuck did this just start with? But I, not having seen this, I wasn't surprised because I knew the episodes that do the same thing.
We're hearing that clones are scarce as more planets join Dooku's Separatists. We're also hearing that Jabba's son has been kidnapped and Jabba sends a call to the Jedi for help. More on this later. Palpatine says that they must help Jabba rescue his son as Mace questions helping him out. And this was interesting. You know, Adam, how the hell did they get Christopher Lee and Samuel L. Jackson for this?
They weren't a rich. If I remember right, and I could be mishearing it, at least Sam Jackson was kind of like, fuck yeah, I'll go do it. But from what I understand, they had recorded somebody else doing Dooku, and then Christopher Lee was like, hey, that's me. I will be happy to come in and do this. And he re-recorded after somebody did it because he wanted to continue to play that role. And I can't believe they got either one of them. And I'm going to put this on Front Street. Christopher Lee is much fucking better in this, just in voice, than he is in any of the movies. And the way that he is by the end of this, I think maybe Count Dooku should have been the Phantom Menace instead of Palpatine. Because Christopher Lee has the ability to project some menace that I never got of him live action.
That's the thing about the show in general, is that it really does Dooku, of a lot of the characters, I think, because you have so much time, you really get to expand upon all these characters. So, like, the Clone Wars show is really great at answering all the criticisms people had of the prequels. Like, lack of character development, no camaraderie between Anakin and Obi-Wan, Dooku doesn't feel like that much of a threat and he's taken out too early, you know, there's no overarching villain. I think this show provides a perfect antidote for all that, and including in this movie, mostly with Dooku. I think having Christopher Lee there is a solid plus, but, I mean, Corey Burton has voiced Dooku in basically everything else. I think this is the only thing Christopher Lee ever came back for, and it's weird going back and watching this because Christopher Lee had such a distinctive voice. And while Corey Burton gets pretty close, I mean, if you've heard Corey Burton's voice in something, if you've ever played a game, like he was Hugo Strange in Arkham City. He's done a lot of voiceover work. He's sort of like in the Mark Hamill ironic situation of you've heard his voice before. But I think Dooku as the villain of this movie, this is kind of, while I like him in Attack of the Clones, this is a little bit closer to what I envisioned and just furthers my argument that he could have been the overarching villain of the entire prequel trilogy.
So they didn't get Jackson or Dooku for the series, is what you're saying?
No, they got this really bad Sam Jackson impersonator. The best person they got that sort of did their own thing was, it's not Palpatine. I mean, it's not Ian McDermott. I mean, look, at this point, they're one and the same. When this voice actor died, they brought in Tim Curry.
Oh, okay.
And Tim Curry's fucking awesome as Palpatine. He basically comes in around the same time as when Darth Maul gets brought back, and Palpatine's like, I have no use for you because you got your ass kicked by Obi-Wan. Just go die in a hole somewhere. The only other person I think, because they got Anthony Daniels to come back for this, too.
Of course.
Because that son of a bitch just whores himself into anything.
Yes.
Because he thinks he's the most important. He's like God's gift to Star Wars. But the Jabba the Hutt thing, I like this as a plot point, actually, as far as the Republic and the Separatists having to appeal to the Mafia for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, you've always said that about Jabba, that he kind of represents that side of the galaxy, that kind of underbelly that is so seedy. And now, like, the Jedi have to work with him, help him out so that he does work with them. Yeah, I kind of like it as a concept, too, but we'll get to how it's executed. Mace even says that there is more to this kidnapping than what is on the surface. We're then hearing Yoda. Bad Yoda impression, by the way.
That's the thing.
Really bad.
Tom Kane has done, he's sort of like Corey Burton, where he does Yoda and basically everything for extended media. And it's just off. There's no one else like him. It's like when they bring in people to do Mark Hamill's Joker, like Troy Baker. It's like, you can get close, but there's that one thing that you can't get it 100% right. Now, he's done other Star Wars characters. Like, he's a big voice actor, too. Am I the only one to watch Powerpuff Girls?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, well, given my age, that shouldn't surprise you guys. He was the voice of him, and he was the voice of Darwin in the Wild Thornberries. He voiced Magneto in Wolverine and the X-Men. Oh. Pretty interesting body of work. But yeah, his Yoda is the one. Of all the people who come in to replace the live-action actors, I think he's the weakest by far.
We're hearing Yoda say, no time there is. They need to get in contact with Kenobi. We cut to Kenobi and Anakin as they're bitching at one another and are in battle with some battle droids. I do like seeing a plan that Kenobi and Anakin do and have it be executed in this manner. Instead of just the plain bickering that we saw in the prequels, we are actually seeing them at their best here. And I have to say, I'm liking how this is starting out.
I feel like I'm watching a cartoon, and I know that I am, but I'm just very aware that I'm just like seeing repetitive animation and battle, and part of it I like, and part of it I'm like, okay, I could tell where you're trying to kill 22 minutes. Part of this I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool, but I'm also of the mind that I'm like, I've seen this, and I've played this, but to your point, yeah, there's some of this I like, and I like seeing Obi-Wan and Anakin. But I also don't feel like this is the problem with setting it in the middle of something else. I know they're never in danger. I know where they go. I also already know where Anakin got a scar, little things like that from the others. So I just got a problem with trying to care, of what's going on.
It's a difficult hurdle that's just impossible to overcome with the prequels. But I will say this, one of the things I do really like about the show, it's touched on here, but it's really expanded upon, is there's actual wartime strategy. This puts the war in Star Wars, finally, this TV show, where there's actual talk about, like, what are you willing to sacrifice? What actual strategy discussions? The loss of life. Like, there's a lot of actual, like, wartime discussion devoted in this show that actually makes the Clone Wars feel like an actual struggle. It doesn't feel as one-sided as it does in the movies because the clones just turn the droids into mincemeat. The voice actor, that guy does a spot-on Ewan McGregor impression.
Yeah, the Kenobi is really good. We're also seeing R2 in the heart of battle as the droids retreat. And we're also learning that Kenobi is bringing a new Padawan along and recommends Anakin get one as well, as he'd be a great teacher. But little did he know that we're meeting Ahsoka.
Ahsoka.
Who? Ahsoka. Sorry. All right.
Sorry.
We're meeting Ahsoka.
Ahsoka is a wrestler.
If I don't say it, people will throw a fit because she is beloved.
I know. I know how beloved she is.
Not because of this movie.
I sure as hell hope not. We're meeting Ahsoka, who I wonder if she'll show up in the universe again. I'm trying to think. Have I seen her again? Of course I have. Here, she's just fucking annoying.
With a capital A. I think she is one of the best characters in all of Star Wars, but not because of this movie. She's annoying with a capital A. She's bratty. That's the only note she's asked to play. But when the show actually gets its ass into gear, she has one of the best arcs in all of Star Wars with her, you know, eventual disillusionment with the Jedi Order as a whole. But this is the problem with this movie. It contradicts a lot of what the prequels actually did. Episode 3, Mace Windu says, "You're on this council, but we don't grant you the rank of master." But there's no implication that he ever took on a Padawan of any kind. And why would you give Anakin a Padawan to begin with if he's not a master? Padawans are the participation trophies of the Jedi, apparently, where everybody just fucking gets one.
Now, Garrett, I will say, if you ever want to watch this in a good verse, watch the last four episodes of the final season. I'm serious that it's a movie designed that way. I think you'll go, fuck, we may need to review this. Watch the last four. It's a close to this story. For those, I absolutely love Soka Tano. To Matt's point, one of my favorite characters in Star Wars, period. Have her book, which does an amazing job. Even just Ashley Eckstein, who voices her here, but I admire and appreciate, because she created her own business and line around this character. And then when she was cast aside for somebody who decided that they were going to not fucking act when they played this role in live action, she still acted gracious and wonderful. And like everything around Ahsoka, I'm a huge, huge fan of. I fucking adore. And it has nothing to do with this movie whatsoever. Side note, and I think it's where it's important, she was created to be Obi-Wan's Padawan. And that's who it was supposed to be. And it was a fight between Filoni and Lucas.
In Phantom Menace, Qui-Gon tries to take on Anakin as a second Padawan. And the Jedi are like, nope, the rules are one at a time.
The rules are also too old or too young, and somehow she keeps being told that she's too old or too young.
This is my problem.
It's contradictory when they want it to be an issue.
Yeah, this is another chink in my armor of the Jedi just suck. At least the Sith, you know, because Dooku has an apprentice in this, at least the Sith don't have that hard rule. Or at least they don't enforce it as much.
I'm looking at her like she's supposed to be like a preteen. Like, dude, put some fucking clothes on. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and it's almost like a date rape situation.
It really is.
Thankfully, they don't, you know, in the show, there's no romantic subplot between her and Anakin. Thankfully, they avoided that, because I felt like that was the obvious thing they could have done, because that also creates the problem, okay, where does that leave Padme?
Mm-hmm.
So, do you mean that Anakin was fucking around on the side?
Yeah, exactly.
Thankfully, they avoid that, but that was the obvious curveball they could have thrown, but thankfully, they didn't swing at it. But yeah, she is annoying as all hell in this movie, and it's amazing what they've done with this character since, because they started her in such a low point. You know, it's hard to think of characters that can recover from this type of... Because she got a lot of backlash. She was one of the things that, you know, in a movie that was not well-received, she was one of the things that almost everyone united on, yeah, she's an insufferable child.
I remember a little bit about that when this was out, that she was just the worst part about it. And like you said, Jar Jar levels of just people wanting her head on a platter, pretty much.
She's not the worst. Can I just say, though, as much as I do like this show, I still have never been on board with this art style, because when you put 3D models where everything is rigid in the backdrop, it just looks off. I was listening to a review from way, way back, and they basically said it looks like they took marionettes and just, you know, put some acrylic paint on them and put them in front, you know, that's what they rendered in the computer. I've never loved this art style at all. I wish they could take what they did with Rebels animation and just retroactively apply it to the Clone Wars.
I look at this animation, I think of Team America.
that's what I said at the opening. Yeah. That's why I made that show. Because, like, you look at the Avatar The Last Airbender, that's got some of the best animation you will ever see. And that was a Nickelodeon production. Mm-hmm. That did not get that. I think there were so many other ways they could have gone. I mean, look, you took the title, just do the Tartakovsky set again. Like, I love that art style. Because the faces on these characters can't emote that much, which I guess matches the prequels because it's very wooden. to match the puppet-like features of these characters. But yeah, it's, you know, I've never been able to get over it. That's just me being an animation snob, full transparency. You know, it's my favorite genre, if you want to call it that. So
they make contact with their superiors and say that they are outnumbered, but their reception is like any cell phone reception in 2005. It's pretty bad.
Especially if you had AT&T.
Exactly. We're learning here that Skywalker is actually Ahsoka's teacher, not Obi-Wan, as Kenobi smiles. So, of course, he was behind it the whole time.
And this reinforces Yoda is a dick.
Yes.
This was Yoda's idea.
Yes.
You just took my note. How dangerous is it that you are going to force a student upon somebody that the council already has issues with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's the Jedi's fault that he ends up just slaughtering them all because you all pushed him into this shit.
Let's also remember, right before this, Anakin slaughtered all the sand people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Yoda felt that.
Yep.
But he still gave him a bad one.
Let's give him a teenage girl that can't dress.
This will teach him.
Here we go.
I thought for sure, like, you know, if there was somebody they could have brought back, you could have paid the extra money to get Hayden Christensen to come back. I'm sure he would have been happy to.
You think the acting on Anakin's part is holding this down? I didn't really notice that big of a difference, honestly.
I like Matt Lanter a lot as Anakin throughout the show, but it's not like Hayden would have cost that much.
We're hearing that the plan to kidnap Jabba's son is in full effect. Ahsoka starts in...
The son is never mentioned in any other form of media.
I was getting to that. Ahsoka starts introducing herself and even calls Anakin Sky Guy. And Anakin calls...
Oh my god.
Anakin calls her Snips. Yeah, this is terrible.
Yeah,
These nicknames are cute 3 seasons later in the show when they have a relationship and it's like, it's a form of... It's great. And in the final season, it's really great. It's annoying as shit right here.
Well, didn't they do away with it, though? They did away with it because of the backlash it was receiving when she was on the show. That's what I had heard.
They still have a playful rapport, but she becomes much more respectful of him as a teacher. But she also ages appropriately. She grows up by being in the Jedi, being indoctrinated with the Jedi. But she also has a second master, if you want to call it, with Captain Rex, who's one of the clone troopers.
Mm-hmm.
But they also give her a huge, like, one of the biggest arcs in that show is when she gets framed for, like, the big explosion. She gets exonerated, but she's like, look, this whole process is bullshit, so I'm just leaving the Jedi.
Mm-hmm. She calls out the Jedi. She's like, fuck it. You know, y'all suck. And everything is your fault. Basically, everything that we said in episode 1, 2, and 3, Ahsoka lays out in that TV series and walks away from the order to the point that Anakin's like, Jedi don't walk away, and there's a famous line, and it's she puts it on her merchandise, says, I am no Jedi, and walks away from the order, and it's glorious.
Because if you also notice, she doesn't have, what color would you call those lightsabers?
Hers here, green.
Green here, but eventually she has white ones.
White, yep.
Which... To me, that even as a colorblind person, that's fucking stupid. I'm like, pick something. For the record, I'm going to get super nerdy here. The best-looking lightsaber for me, if you ask me like if I could pick a color, if you played Knights of the Republic 2, the orange one?
Orange.
The orange one looks awesome. If you pick blue, I question your life decision.
We see a strategic plan of attack as they plan on going after the shield generator. All right, so you just mentioned him maybe about 5 minutes ago. Who's Rex?
He's the captain of the clones.
He's the one that had the clones.
We're hearing that Jabba has sent bounty hunters to hunt for his son, and they're in a monastery on planet Teth. Yoda, proving he's always been annoyingly observant, says that this mystery is greater than they think, and he will go help Kenobi.
Adam, when they said bounty hunters, because I couldn't remember, did you think this is where Cad Bane debuted?
I was wondering Cad Bane, but I'm also waiting for a bunch to show up here, because this is when you bust out Dengar. This is when you have some fun, but they don't do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was
waiting for... ID-88.
Uh-huh.
Bossk.
Meanwhile...
And Garrett's like, who are...
No, I know Bossk.
For the record, Cad Bane is what everybody likes about Boba Fett, except actually done well.
Meanwhile, Ahsoka says that she's the one with enthusiasm, and Anakin's the one with experience. Anakin gets a plan as we cut to a battle and Kenobi orders the clones to fall back. We see Anakin and Ahsoka, they're doing the old Metal Gear hiding in a box trick as Kenobi and the clones attack.
It works.
Yeah, press Y to stop kill your enemy.
I will never understand the Dune logic of I can't shoot past this force field, but I can walk through
it. Yeah, it's in my notes too. Yeah. I was thinking that as well.
You know, somewhere Qui-Gon's ghost is watching going, that's bullshit.
Ahsoka stands up and they bump into a droideka. They run from it as they stop, and Anakin slices it in half. Kenobi says that he will negotiate his surrender. Meanwhile, Yoda gets on a ship and says that they must aid Kenobi, but the commander is hesitant due to the blockade, which Yoda is apprehensive about. Meanwhile, Ahsoka, she once again fucks up, and her and Anakin find themselves in another conundrum. But Ahsoka cuts a hole in a rock and saves Anakin's life. We see Kenobi making more strides in his negotiations, and he admits that he was just stalling until the shields were cut, which they finally are, and Kenobi attacks. Anakin calls Ahsoka reckless and tells her that while she wouldn't make it as a Kenobi Padawan, she just might make it as his.
Aww. I like this moment.
I do too, actually.
I haven't led up to it. I think it's a good moment. I still have a huge problem with Anakin getting a Padawan whatsoever and everything else, but it's sweet.
Yeah, it's just, the moment is good, it's just the logic to get to this point makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Anakin reunites with Kenobi and Yoda, and Anakin tells Yoda that he has no problem taking Ahsoka as his Padawan. Yoda then...
Now I will.
Yoda then sends Anakin to rescue Jabba's son. Yoda says that he thinks Anakin is ready for the task of teaching a Padawan, but he's not sure if Anakin is ready to let one go. Which I thought was kind of a poignant line. We cut to Jabba, who gets a visit from the bounty hunters sent to rescue his son, or at least their heads. Are we supposed to sympathize with Jabba now? Like, that was my whole thing. Like, are we supposed to cry for this guy who pretty much froze the most popular character in Star Wars history and almost killed him? Jabba's kind of like a good guy now.
This is where getting into this too much when I was younger can be frustrating later. But there's a series of books, and part of them are in the Han Solo trilogy back before they made the movie that we'll discuss. But one of them is called The Hutt Gambit. And it's a younger Jabba. It's a younger Solo. But it's Jabba coming to prominence and building that kind of godfather-type mythos around him. None of that is here.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like, I don't know, other than Lucas just wanting to put Jabba and Filoni drawn up, hey, look at this little turd-looking thing that we could find a way to put in here. This is such a weird inclusion. And for something that's going to go as long as the series did, I can't believe we're going back to fucking Jabba the Hutt and Tatooine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the problem that the prequels had where you brought in almost every pre-established character who could have conceivably been alive. R2-D2, C-3PO, Chewbacca, Yoda. Now you're going down the totem pole to Jabba. And they continue that because fucking Greedo is in the show.
Yeah, Greedo's in the show, yeah.
And Cy Snoodles is in the show, too. So they want that thing dry.
Yep.
You need to go to the point where you need... Okay, you're a full-blown war, but you really need to worry about the Hutts allowing passage through this section?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're back to trade routes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's the thing I like. At least they're keeping consistent with the prequels. Because the Phantom Menace, that's the whole point of the first movie. If you had to choose a plot point, this one is at least reinforcing that, and I love that Jabba is you have to basically pay him off or work with him to have access to that section, which, I don't know what they're selling. Tatooine is the big shithole in the galaxy.
I don't know, it gets a lot of travel, so...
Yeah, it gets a lot. They get a lot of mileage.
Yes.
I mean, so much so that they put up a for sale sign and cloned the planet and called it Jakku.
Save it for next week. Jabba sends a signal to Palpatine saying he's impatient with the pursuit of his son. Ahsoka, meanwhile, she impresses the troops with her unhumbled explanation of what she did, which Anakin chastises her for. We then cut to Obi-Wan on his mission to reach Jabba. I hate seeing this character. I love so much in Jedi released to a plot like this. I love Jabba the Hutt in Return of the Jedi. Now he's just a fucking MacGuffin.
The son is the MacGuffin.
The son is, but yeah, okay. The Jabba family. Which, by the way, he fucks somebody to get this son. Like, it just makes no fucking sense.
It's that problem of we gotta find a way to just pigeonhole every character into this period.
Yep. And Matt, we are 30 minutes into this movie, and I'm already feeling like we're in the midst of a few years ago when me and you reviewed Transformers, the animated movie. There's a hell of a lot of noise, not much plot.
Yeah, this movie it puts action above story. Like, this plot is razor, razor thin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of unfortunate because I think there are other episodes in this show that you could have strung together and released as a movie and gone, holy shit, that really delivers. But this would not have been, if I was running Star Wars, I'd probably be running around like Darth Vader in A New Hope just force choking people saying this sucks. What are you doing? But I think there were other stories you could have told during the Clone Wars. Maybe pick up right after the Clone Wars. Because the weird thing is, Grievous is not in this movie at all.
Doesn't he get one mention?
He is in the Tartakovsky series.
Yeah. Another battle ensues as battle droids once again prove to be idiots. And Ahsoka says, so this is where the fun begins. So we gotta get...
Anakin stole that line from his Padawan.
Oh my god.
Mentioned before, like, I've always kind of liked the battle droids. I find it fun. You need that little bit of humor, you know, every now and then when stuff gets dry. But the way that these things are written and the lines that they're given here are unacceptable. This is fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The conversations these droids are having back and forth.
They've gone from being the putty patrol where they're just disposable minions to they're a step below the racist robots from Transformers 2.
Adam, I believe you were the only one who defended Roger Roger when we did that podcast.
Shoot, I like Roger Roger. I like them. Well, you're under arrest. But here, that they're just kind of like joking with each other while they're standing out on patrol makes no sense whatsoever.
That's a great point. Anakin says they need to find Jabba's son and get out of there. To which Ahsoka says, at least the hard part's over. We're hearing how smugglers live in this galaxy as he walks through the temple, and both he and Ahsoka, they get a warning from a droid inside that this isn't the place for younglings.
Then he should have said, these are not the droids you're looking for.
All right, so one of you two nerds. Who's Ventress?
Ooh, now we get to talk about a character I actually like. So, not to get too deep into the wells. So, she was actually supposed to be in Attack of the Clones. When they were first conceiving that movie, they wanted to have a female villain before they settled on Count Dooku, so they retroactively took that concept and applied it to her. But she's basically part of the Night Sisters, which are this group of witches, who was sold into slavery, and she became a Padawan with the Jedi. But her master died, so she kind of went destitute, and she became Count Dooku's apprentice, but not in a formal sense like the Jedi do. She's basically like if you cross a Sith with a bounty hunter. Like, she's Dooku's hit woman, basically. But what's interesting is eventually Palpatine finds out and says, you need to kill her, because Palpatine's smart to realize, you know, they outnumber him. So eventually Dooku turns on her, and she tries to redeem herself. So they've done a lot of good things with this character. But she was in the Tartakovsky show, the micro-series. So she's been established before this movie.
Okay.
But there's a lot of good stuff with this character. I'd like to see her in live action at some point, but by this point you'd have to go back and find a way. It'd have to be during this period.
Not to spoil things, but based on the current season of The Bad Batch, she could now come back.
Adam, you like this character?
I think she's fantastic. Asajj Ventress, I'm a big fan. I like the look. As much as I railed on Dooku and Christopher Lee's saber hilt styles, I think it works with the way Ventress fights. And, yeah, I think she's badass. I like that we have kind of an angry Sith Padawan, for, like Matt said, for lack of a better term, but isn't, you know, a Padawan, just that kind of learner. And, yeah, the entire run that they do with Ventress, I think, is really, really cool.
Ahsoka continues to nag, this time about not being able to take droids home, and Anakin says, nice job destroying their weapons first. So she's kind of learning as we're going along here. And did they actually make a Hutt baby cute? Like, I'm seeing this baby be revealed.
No.
Oh, come on. I see this baby revealed. I buy a toy of this.
Great. I used to have to pick maggots out of the garden to go fishing with as well, and no. Looks like a bloodworm.
Oh. A Jabba's kid?
Yeah, Jabba's kid, yeah.
I don't know if I'd buy a doll named Stinky.
Wow.
But you talk about the one thing that makes this movie really childish, it's that. Having these characters say the word Stinky over and over.
Stinky.
Are you kidding? From the intro, Matt, this movie is kidified. The announcer telling us, instead of having people read what's going on, that is kidified. Like, this whole movie was made for fucking 6-year-olds.
It is. This is almost the Disney Junior level.
Yes.
You know, it's playing to that. Because it's really, you know, at least in the live-action movies, there's dismemberment. And there's some disturbing shit in Revenge of the Sith on the level of what a 13-year-old thinks. Here, all the action, it's taking that thing of, well, you got robots fighting clones, so we can be as violent as we want, but there's no, you know, there's no oomph to the violence. This movie's like watching G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
The Republic is G.I. Joe, and the Separatists are Cobra, and you're just watching two, like, CGI blobs go back and forth. So that makes Stinky whatever the, who's the recruit in the Transformers animated movie? Is it Hotshot or something like that?
Hot Rod.
Hot Rod. See, that shows how little I remember about those shows.
Dooku lets Jabba know that it was actually the Jedi who kidnapped his son. Anakin gives Ahsoka the task of carrying the Hutt, Meanwhile, Dooku is showing Jabba the footage of the Jedi around his son and taking in all they say, which of course is taking all way out of context.
I hate this so much. Jabba was never stupid. He's a gangster. He's not stupid, and he's immune from Jedi mind tricks. So he would know that everybody is going to play him. He's got no reason to trust Dooku whatsoever. It's just, like him or not, he's not stupid, and this plays him like he's just a gullible idiot, and that's not Jabba.
That was going to be my point as well, but also let's remember the Jedi, and the Sith for that matter, are very good about wording their phrases very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
From a certain point of view.
Meanwhile, the Jedi Knights are in another battle, as I thought I heard the Wilhelm scream here.
I did.
Nice little touch there. Ahsoka starts getting restless as the baby falls asleep. Ahsoka says that she's not too young to be a Padawan. She's not a youngling.
Well, no, because we saw in the fucking Attack of the Clones bullshit that they put a bunch of three-year-olds with helmets on and just lightsabers.
Yes. Obi-Wan calls for help as Anakin and Ahsoka are attacked by what she calls rolling death balls.
That's really what they should have been called.
Yeah, it really is.
Once you can make droid decas, stop making other droids.
Right?
Yeah. Why is that the only thing? That should be the only thing you manufacture.
Absolutely.
Qui-Gon couldn't get through those things.
Mm-hmm.
He saw two in a hallway with Obi-Wan and said, fuck this.
Took off like fucking Roadrunner.
And that's the one time you see the Jedi use their, flash powers.
Ahsoka is being attacked by Ventress and is rescued by Anakin as they grab Jabba's son. Ventress takes the frustration of losing them out on a battle droid. They then...
I like this, where the battle droids are just here.
Yes.
To be punching bags for the villain.
Yes. They then try getting Stinky, as they call him, out of there. But R2 once again has to bail them out, so he's here for the rescue again. Ahsoka tells Anakin that they need to take Stinky to a medic, as he doesn't look very good. Meanwhile, Obi-Wan, he's fighting Ventress, who wields double lightsabers. It'll be a bit before Obi-Wan fights someone who actually has one saber.
The one bit of continuity is that she's from the same planet as Darth Maul. She's from Dathomir. So I guess that the curved double blades that can separate, maybe that's something on her planet. I don't know the full details of that, but it's a cool design. I like that she's basically Bellatrix of this era of Star Wars, where you have the second in command for the main villain.
Yeah, and I want to say, I wasn't making fun of it. I was just kind of having fun with the fact that Obi-Wan, every time we turn around, he's fighting Grievous, he's fighting Darth Maul. Like, he can't get one of these fuckers with just a regular fucking lightsaber until we get Darth Vader in Episode 4.
That's a good point. You know what I like about this, too, and I got to admire it, because you don't see it really in media, is you have Ventress, you have a female villain going toe-to-toe with a male.
I thought
and
of that,
too. And you don't get that.
Yeah.
You don't get that. Normally, that's why you bring in a female side character to go up against your female villain, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So to have her and Obi-Wan go toe-to-toe, to have her and Anakin, I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Anakin, meanwhile, he takes a ship into the blockade in order to get Stinky onto a medic ship. And Ahsoka is not having it when they tell the ship to stand by. Like, she's just getting way impatient here.
Get that Padawan some Ritalin and tell her to chill the fuck.
The ship they try to get on is blown up, so Anakin says they'll have no choice but to take Stinky to, you guessed it, Tatooine.
See that word is like nails on a chalkboard when it comes to Star Wars. Every time we go back to the shithole of the planet, I get just progressively more and more irritated. Like, this franchise has ruined the beach for me because of all the sand.
So you agree with Anakin and sand?
Yeah, I'm starting to understand Anakin.
Yeah.
I need a return to Tatooine. Like, I need Cerebro to show back up in a fucking X-Men anything. Just enough with it. And not to mention, after what Anakin had gone through, there should be a reluctance and a refusal to go to Tatooine. But it also, he should never have returned to that planet after what happened, and after burying his mother.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you kind of take away him burying his mother on the Lars homestead when you do this. It really bugs me to that point. I feel like it's disrespectful to what happened there. And I don't care if it's Filoni or Lucas writing it. It's, George wrote it, it's okay. I don't give a shit. It takes away from a poignant moment, because I do think that's an emotional, really good beat that happens in that second film when he slaughters the Sand People and what he goes through with his mother. Like, I think that's the proper turn to the dark side. And I just hate what this does with that.
And it also, like, if you made that emphatically clear, you get past the obvious stupid thing of, well, why are you sending Luke to live with his family? Well, the reason is because Vader swore off going back to that planet. He would have no reason to return.
In place in the galaxy he would never return to.
Yeah, because he just is so traumatized by what that planet has done for him. But by never calling it out, it just makes that all the more dumb as time has gone on. The fact that they've had so many chances to call that out and have not.
Adam, that's a great point. Why is it when he can't get on this ship, the very first thing he thinks of is the place he buried his mom?
Yeah, I just don't like it. It's lazy.
Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah.
Stay tuned for The Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to say, at this point in this movie series, the animation style is really starting to bug me. When they're doing this battle, when they're doing this other stuff, I feel like I'm watching a web animated series with the way some of this animation is starting to look. I don't.
Yeah, it looks like something I would have seen on Newgrounds.
Yeah, it doesn't feel consistent. It's starting to feel choppy, and that's shitty when it's all supposed to be one thing.
Ventress and Obi-Wan, they continue to impress Adam in the animation with their battle. Ahsoka, she tries her best to nurse Stinky back to health. Now, seeing that the hut is now in the rebels' hands, Ventress retreats from her battle with Obi-Wan. Ahsoka, she gives Stinky meds, telling him, "You'll take this and like it." It works.
That's what we're getting told with Ahsoka.
Yeah. It works.
I think you told Padme the same thing.
It works, as she says, Stinky will live to stink another day. Anakin.
You know what? If you have kids, then that's the gut on his truth.
And,
yeah, except this movie's only 98 minutes.
Oh, God, it felt like a fucking eternity, too. This felt like it was a 2.5-hour fucking feature film. Kind of like that fucking Transformers movie did, Matt, now that I think about it. There's more similarities than I remember.
There are, but I will say, I liked this better than that Transformers movie. Oh,
to be determined on my
end. If you forced me to pick one.
Mm. Better music in the Transformers one. Anakin takes the ship to Tatooine as Jabba gets news that the Jedi have killed his son. Dooku piles on, saying that the Jedi Knights have made it their mission to wipe out the entire Hutt race. This Ahsoka, man, she's just such a nag as attack ships approach. There's another argument between the two as Anakin maneuvers the ship out of danger. Yoda senses right away that Ahsoka is hiding something, as Palpatine tells Padme that Anakin has abducted Jabba's son. So Padme, getting involved in the story, she sets out to prove that accusation wrong. Took her long enough.
Yeah, it took her until 2/3 of the way through the movie. Yeah. And what happens? She gets detained.
Oh my God.
I mean, if this was playing in normal time, I think this was episode 7 or 8 by this point.
You're not,
because they weren't concurrent.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Anakin and Ahsoka, they onboard that ship on Tatooine as Jabba looks on. We cut to inside a sleazy cantina where we meet Zero the Hutt. Ugh, I hate this character. Who's this fucking character besides just Jabba's brother, I guess, right?
This is me pushing pause to see how much time is left.
Yeah.
Of me having to sit through this thing, because, wow. The way it's voiced, the character design, the fact that this dude's not just speaking English, but some weird dialect and fucking intonations, doesn't speak Huttese until, like, the very end. This is a, you know, this is a kiddie decision. This is someone to make your 5-year-old laugh, but I can't stand watching it.
Yep.
We do get a Max Rebo cameo, and that popped me.
Who's Max Rebo?
The Cantina Band.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Padme makes her way inside and negotiates with Zero to end the dispute by signing a treaty while trying to convince them that the Jedi's actually were trying to rescue Stinky, not kill him.
And I love her look. Her design looks fucking fantastic.
I agree with that.
Yeah, hers is the one that translates the best.
Yeah.
Yep. I can't stand it later because they get lazy and just bring in the episode 2 outfit, but she looks great here.
It's like they ran out of money.
Yeah. Hey, get that toy design. Bring in the 3D model that you're putting up on that new statue.
Zero understands the offer, but he won't sign. Padme senses a trap and takes out some droids as she hides and sees a transmission from Dooku to Zero. Padme then sees the hologram, and Dooku orders Padme to be taken hostage. Good job, Padme.
But it's the same thing as Attack of the Clones. She's just here to get captured.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah. Anakin says that he doesn't want to talk about his past or sand, as Ahsoka turns to Artui for conversation. Artui.
I'm sure R2 is a blast to talk to at a bar. If you got him drunk, it would just be him ranting for 40 minutes about how much he fucking hates that gold gay robot.
This fucking Skywalker family. Do you know how much shit I've had to put through with this one fucking family?
He's like, for a franchise that's preoccupied with Nazi imagery, why are they so obsessed with bloodlines?
Goudreau, I've gotten drunk with you in a bar. It's like hanging out with you too, by the way.
I don't talk. I just sit there silently and look at you.
Anakin and Ahsoka, they sense the dark side nearby, and Anakin orders that they separate as he has a more important mission in mind for her. Padme gets a transmission out to 3PO and orders he get her some help. Dooku and Anakin fight again as Dooku says that he senses pain within him and he can't trick him when he says that he killed Stinky.
Killed the Stinky every morning after having my morning cup of coffee.
I was going to say, you pay $30 at Chipotle, that's what you get. The Force does awaken.
We're seeing the guards with the Force sticks hang around as R2-E and Ahsoka, they take some out. Remember these guards from episode 3? Like, they show up.
Oh, randomly. My
God. The guards are here when Grievous went back to his home.
Yeah, where the fuck is Grievous?
I loathe the fact that they just put electricity around shit to block lightsabers. I hate it in the prequels, I hate it in this, and I hate it in the fucking sequels. You know why it doesn't exist in the original trilogy? Because it was fucking stupid and Lucas didn't put it in there.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't stand it. You know when it's fun in a video game and I'm an active participant? Outside of that, this is stupid. I can't fucking stand it.
This is the problem with even Knights of the Old Republic. I love that. That's one of my favorite. The first one's one of my favorite games. The swords in that game are weaved with something to specifically withstand being hit by a lightsaber. I'm like, this franchise has to go out of its way to explain why weapons can withstand being hit by a lightsaber.
Meanwhile, clones enter Zero's cantina and take him hostage. Anakin gets to Jabba and it's revealed that his son's not with them, which pisses Jabba off to the point that he wants them executed. Meanwhile, Amidala, she sends a telegram telling Jabba of the plot used to frame the Jedis.
Nice timing.
Beautiful timing. This is the fucking... This is the resolution of everything. Just send a telegram.
Well, this prequel trilogy is all about treaties.
Yep. Dooku finally converses with Sidious. Nice seeing you here, sir. Everyone is reunited, including Jabba and his son, as credits roll on the Clone Wars. First four episodes.
You did forget the dumbest thing in this movie. Like, you talk about Jabba being stupid. Dooku gets beaten by a backpack full of rocks.
Oh, God, yeah.
Dooku and Anakin fighting. You want to talk about something that takes away from their reunitement in Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Well, that happens a lot. They fight a lot in the show, as does Obi-Wan, but I like that Obi-Wan gets his ass kicked every single time. Because they have a big fight in one of the episodes with Palpatine in the room.
All right, boys. Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Clone Wars? Adam, you go ahead and go, sir.
As much as I had never seen the Clone Wars, I was looking forward to it for the reason of in the last several years, especially since I've had my own younglings. My youngest, or my oldest, is 16, so they're not too young anymore. I've grown not just to appreciate, but to really adore the Star Wars animated series. But much like many other animated series, when they go long, and when they have hundreds of episodes, as the Clone Wars animated series does, you learn to take them in chunks, and you learn to take them in arcs. And that's how some of those are best done. But to put these four together and to form a structured story, this thing fails on every level. And that was unbelievable to me, because I was like, well, I haven't heard good things, but so much of the other stuff is good. I figured this was a great kickoff to the universe, and boy was I wrong. You have Obi-Wan and Satine. You have the fall of Mandalore. You have so much good shit that you could put four episodes together to make a movie, and this is what you get instead. You get the introduction of Ahsoka, which is ridiculously important, but I'm glad they changed who she is. You get Jabba and Stinky. You get Yoda being the Dumbledore that shows up just to be a dick on occasion throughout this opening movie. This thing is just bad on every level. I cannot believe this series redeems itself as hard as it does from this, because this should have been, we got the movie, we got one season, and we got shit canned. And I can't believe it grew to be what it is, and I admire those involved for it. I admire those that stuck around, changed, and evolved it into the great series that it does become. But this movie is bad. It is really bad. I'm glad that I kind of took it in half-hour chunks at a time, because if I tried to watch this thing in one whole glob, I would have been stinky on the couch myself. It's a wasted opportunity. Even the talent involved is wasted on a bland story. Ventress is intriguing. It's got some really cool shots and colors on occasion. There's a moment with the clones inside the dropship and the red lights that get you some really cool imagery. The twin sons of Tatooine, we get some beautiful shots, but they are so far and few between that it can't redeem this pile. This is an utterly skippable movie. Just start with episode one. Skip this movie. Don't bother. It's a 4/10, and that's just because I think of what came after. But there's almost nothing redeeming in this other than a few good voice actors and basically a Asajj Ventress.
You're saying start with Phantom Menace? Oh, not
no,
that.
No,
not
no,
that
no, 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 no.
I'm just kidding. No. I'm just kidding.
Well, if you were to go chronologically, episode one is the right place to start.
Matt, what you say, sir?
It's really weird. I'm going to quote Kylo Ren, where I feel like I'm torn between both sides, because I don't know how much I can ding this movie for being a theatrical experience when it should not have been by all intents. But I also feel like that's the biggest mark I also have to cast against it, because this clearly was not appropriate for a movie. Structurally, it's not. The plot is razor thin, as I mentioned. I really detest how they introduced Ahsoka. And even in something with Star Wars, which is fantasy with some space, hammer and nails, science fiction around it, this is dumb. And I think it makes characters like Jabba and Dooku, especially at the end, look really incompetent. After most of the movie does a good job on Dooku's front of, some would argue, supplanting what he did in the original movies. It's an unfortunate introduction, but I have to give credit to this team that they rebounded as well as they did. They had their own Anakin Skywalker redemption. I feel like they threw this movie into the Death Star reactor like Palpatine at the end of Return of the Jedi, and it was the catalyst for starting something better. But looking at this as a singular piece, which I have to, there's not a whole lot for me to recommend, and I think this kind of hurts as an introduction to the show, because if I show someone this and say there's 7 seasons and 100-plus episodes, people are going to be like, fuck that, I'm not watching it. But I always implore people, you know, I would outright skip this, to be perfectly honest, and just start with the first episode, so I echo Adam on that point. And I'm also going to be his Padawan and match his score. I wrote down 4, and I think that's being generous even for me. But like I said, it's kind of hard for me to ding this as a movie, because it's really not. And I would watch this over, I would probably watch this over Caravan of Courage. Trying to think, like, this, Battle of Endor, Caravan of Courage. I would probably watch this over the other two, but that's like asking me, would I rather be strapped to a chair in a Rancor pit or have to sit on the beach with Padme for 3 hours? And I say that as a gay man because I would not like either option. So this is a 4/10 for me.
I think this is the first time in the history of this show that all three of us have 4s written down, because I have the exact same score. It is very telling that this is the first Star Wars property to be released in theaters, only Star Wars property probably to be released in theaters and not reach the $100 million plateau. This thing died a painful death, and it really should stay that way. This is not a pleasurable experience watching this. And you know what? After doing Star Wars with you guys last year, I was ready. You know, we're coming back to this. We'll talk about what we're going to talk about next week. And I was ready for more Star Wars. I was like, okay, I've had a good break. I'm ready to dig back into these characters. I'm going to be more generous. But the more this movie moved along, the more white noise I heard in the background, and the more Ahsoka talked, I was just like, I am so glad this is the only part of this universe that we're going to be doing. Who knows? Maybe one day I'll get to Rebels. Maybe one day I'll get to the entire Clone Wars show. I have Disney Plus. It's a huge possibility. But this movie will not entice you to do either of those things. This movie will turn you off to exploring the Clone Wars. And the thing with Obi-Wan, we talked about this when we did A New Hope. Obi-Wan telling the story of the Clone Wars was good enough for me. I did not want to see it reenacted in a way that is just as annoying on screen as it could be. You know, this is just like watching any of those fucking Transformers films in a 98-minute span. And it's not a good experience watching this movie. I liked the beginning. I liked what it set up. I did kind of like, you know, the rapport between Obi-Wan and Anakin. That's always been something I've kind of enjoyed, even in those prequels. But when it comes to the Clone Wars, stay away. just stay away. It's not really worth it. So 4 out of 10 from me on the feature Clone Wars.
So with our 3 scores, should this review be called The Force Awakens?
Let's talk about next week. Next week, we start the deep dive into the Disney version of Star Wars. By 2012, we'll get into the whole story next week, but Disney had bought Star Wars, and we knew within 24 hours of that purchase that we were going to get new movies. This would come 3 years later. I know my anticipation was high, and I'm going to say right now, I know we're getting 3 more movies, or at least 1 more movie. We'll see about 3. But I hope this is the last time I ever have to talk about these movies. It's going to be a huge deep dive. We're not going to hold back anything. Like I've mentioned when we did the very first Star Wars show on this network, I did talk about these years ago, but this is the time, this is the forum where I really, really want to take the deep dive. And this will be my last time talking about these particular movies, because by this point, I'm exhausted of it. But we have to do it because we're covering all of Star Wars. And we're going to start next week with J.J. Abrams' The Force Awakens. Matt, what do you anticipate when we get to The Force Awakens next week?
Well, it's been a long time since I've seen it. I have to be upfront with that. When this was coming out, I did get hyped up for it in the sense of excitement that we were getting a new Star Wars series. I liked the cast that they assembled. That was something that really excited me. I'm like, I like that you cast a mix of unknowns and some veteran actors. And of course, they brought back a lot of the legacy characters, which I have thoughts about on Inception. But I wasn't pessimistic, really, about it. You know, Disney acquiring it really didn't rough me up one way or the other. But the JJ thing is where my pessimism kicked in, not with Disney. And I'll talk about that once we get to next week. But I got caught up in the euphoria, much like a lot of people did with Episode 1. You know, it's just hard with new Star Wars, especially when that first trailer came out. Mm. It's like, oh my God, we're actually getting, 10 years later, we're getting a new live-action Star Wars movies. If not for me, I was excited that other people were getting excited for Star Wars coming back.
Now, Adam, as somebody who, by the time the prequels were done, you didn't have kids. By the time this was coming out, you had 2. What was your anticipation level? What are you expecting when we get to The Force Awakens next week?
I can still remember the morning that I was at work and my newsfeed blew up and I texted you right away. I was like, did you see, is this real? And you were like, I think this is real.
Well, yeah, I was there when it was announced. Don't forget, I was working for the company at that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it was just unbelievable. Of them getting Lucasfilm. Marvel, that made sense. Lucasfilm, like, that was just, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to take my kids, as I said, like my father before me, I was able to take my kids to see Star Wars in a movie theater. And I was ridiculously excited to do that. My first movie-going experience that I remember was my father taking my older brother and myself to see Return of the Jedi. And in subsequent years, I've taken my kids to see A New Hope. I've taken my kids to see Empire Strikes Back, if they've been re-released in theaters. So, but this was going to be the first new Star Wars movie I was going to be able to see in a theater with my family. And that felt, on surface alone, that felt special. So I was excited. And looking at the trailers, I was like, ooh, hell yeah. Like, I was down. I didn't know any of these people. I was happy about that fact, you know, that we had new actors and actresses coming in. And I was good with J.J. I liked his reboot of Star Trek, you know, it's that first one. I won't say anything else about the other ones because I still haven't seen Star Trek Beyond, but I liked what he did with that first Star Trek and bringing that franchise back, so I was excited to have him do this when I heard that they brought John Williams back for it. So yeah, I was about as in as you could possibly be to see it, and this was a opening weekend Dolby Digital powered recliner, all 4 of us sitting in there to see it, and I could not have been more excited to take my kids to see it. And my wife, just as a family. It was monumental to go see it that way.
We'll talk about this next week. I mean, this movie that we just talked about, notwithstanding, I thought after 2005 that I would not get the new Star Wars experience again. But 10 years later, we had it. And I have thoughts. I have anticipation levels as well. It will all come out next week when we get to The Force Awakens. And in subsequent weeks, because, like I said, Rogue One, The Last Jedi, Solo, Rise of Skywalker, they're all getting the treatment. Yes, people, you've waited a year. We are finally getting to these movies. And like I said, this will be the last time I talk about these films on these airwaves. And so here we go. We're going to start the Disney era of Star Wars next week. and so many other things coming out on this network. As Matt mentioned, he does have the schedule laid out, and cancellations notwithstanding, let's hope it stays that way. We have gotten through.
Yeah, I almost have to, for the record, I should put an asterisk subject to change when I send you the draft.
Yeah. Yes, you do. But Matt, we appreciate the work you do there. Adam, I appreciate the work you do at the network, and can't wait to get to Star Wars and take the deep dive once again, the Star Wars Disney era. But until next week, when we get to Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, this podcast is merciless. It takes everything from you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Sky Guy.
All right, Anakin, here's a story. Jabba has given us only one planetary rotation to get his son back home to Tatooine safe and sound.
Won't take us that long, Master.
Well, take extreme care. We have no idea who's holding Jabba's son.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast, exclusively on Percolated Media.
I hate to admit it, but good job.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
If you are listening, Jedi, you've made a bold move.
Check out the Percolated Media archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including the Mad Max movies, Avatar, Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, Jurassic Park, Top Gun, as well as solo reviews for films like Bad Boys for Life, The Black Phone, Megan, and so many more.
And what makes you say something so utterly ridiculous?
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
You may now commence attack.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
Looks like help has arrived.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
So, this is where the fun begins.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I like the sound of that.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Gentlemen, I see no need for resentment in light of this joyous occasion of my freedom.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
I thought you liked to play in the sand.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
It appears you are in no position to negotiate after all, Padawan.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
Run!
What? Jedi, don't run!
I said run!
Ha 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 ha! I'll give him this. He's sort of become the Kevin Feige equivalent of Star Wars, but the difference is he writes and, you know, directs. He's really involved in the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's really good. Some of it, I think, is hot garbage, but I think that's also just when you've got your fingers in so many pies. I mean, if you look at all the... It's not just this. You look at the whole Disney Plus era of live-action Star Wars. I think he's been involved in almost every show except for Andor, which is pretty telling because I think that's the best of all the live-action shows.
Funny, because I think it's the worst, but maybe that'll probably be safe for another day.
Yeah,
we are not going to do the live-action shows as full retrospectives, but I'm sure they will get mentioned from here on out, more so once we get to the... You know, the post episode 9 talk of where Star Wars currently stands, because we do have some new stuff coming out this year. There's the Skeleton Crew, I think, is this year with Jude Law, and I think that the Mandalorian movie is coming out in a couple of years.
I want to say there's a second Star Wars. I take it the other one that's just about to come out, The Acolyte.
The one where they were so generous to pay for someone's Kickstarter movie it looks like a college film.
Yeah, I'm going to limit my talk about all of those series until we actually finish with the Disney era of Star Wars movies.
And I have to say, I know much more about the, basically from...
But not having seen this, I wasn't surprised because I knew the episodes that do the same thing.
I have a plane. Hold on. Okay.
The plane.
We're hearing that.
I like Matt Lanter a lot as Anakin throughout the show, but it's not like Hayden would have cost that much.
We're hearing that. Well, at this point, though, he was probably still feeling the backlash. This is only 3 years after Revenge of the Sith. He didn't really come back to this universe until, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? Like,
he
wanted far away from it. I don't think he would have come back at this point.
He tried. Remember, like, he was sort of in that Paul Walker mold of, we're going to try to make you a movie star, even though your acting is questionable. Because remember, he did that movie Jumper earlier that year?
Oh, it was horrible. Yeah, that was a terrible movie.
With Sam Jackson, ironically, yeah. Which makes it even fun. But I don't think he had the Jake Lloyd thing of where people, like, hated him personally, because they understood that, you know, like, Lucas gave him bad material. But I don't like this 180 people have done where they say, oh, they've always liked Hayden now.
Yeah, I don't like that, you know, either. I don't like that retroactive.
And the problem is also, like, you know, Hayden Christensen is not David Prowse, so putting him in the Darth Vader armor, I know instantly that's a smaller guy.
Yeah, I think he took about as much backlash as Jake Lloyd, but here's the thing, he handled it better.
Yeah, he wasn't 10.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was wrong, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But he's, you know, I like the cyclical nature of him coming back and, you know, sort of being done better, I would say. Because remember, he also came back for, you know, he has a voiceover, he has like a line in episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah.
He shows up in Ahsoka, he showed up in Obi-Wan, so he's...
Yeah, he's embraced it.
He's been fully back in live action. And also, I'm glad to see him interact with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
But even in those shows that he's been back... I'm sorry, the dude can't act.
Never has, never will. No.
He's a flat animation style.
Yeah, it reinforces, like, you know, it shows that Lucas wasn't the only problem, because you watch him in Ahsoka, and they do that stupid digital de-aging that I'm just sick of, he looks young enough. He's 42, but he still looks young enough to where he didn't have to do that. But yeah, he's just, I mean, like, Rosario Dawson doesn't give a fuck either. So, you know, it kind of matched.
Don't act in that series.
It's still funny, though. He still looks older than Ewan McGregor does now. That's the crazy thing. He sits with that beard, and Obi-Wan's supposed to be, like, 10 years older. He still looks younger. I mean, probably that's because, like, when you see Darth Vader without the mask in that last episode, he's got the white makeup, and he's scarred up. But Obi-Wan does not look as old as he should be. Like, he looks the same as he does in this movie.
Mm-hmm. We're hearing that the plan to kidnap
the Republic is G.I. Joe and the Separatists are Cobra. And you're just watching two, like, CGI blobs go back and forth. So that makes Stinky whatever the, who's the recruit in the Transformers animated movie? Is it Hotshot or something like that?
Hot Rod.
Hot Rod. See, that shows how little I remember about those shows. Apparently we're getting a new one this year.
I was going to say, we got to do it again.
And then the Transformers G.I. Joe crossover yep. is actually going to happen, finally.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck. Damn you, Dwayne Johnson.
The bottle of Jack in the hotel room is going to be gone if this conversation continues.
Meanwhile, Dooku is showing Jabba the footage of the Jedi around his son and taking in all they say, which of course is taking all way out of context. Meanwhile,
stand this. I hate this so much.
What's that? Adam, you go first.
All right. I hate this so much.
They then try getting Stinky, as they call him. They then try getting Stinky.
I can't stand watching it.
Yep. Padme oh, makes
sure. We do get a Max Rebo. Go ahead. Sorry, we do get a Max Rebo.
Cantina and take him hostage. Anakin gets.
All right, Zero is the funniest part of this movie.
Are you serious? Come on, Matt. You're drunk, dude. That's the Jack Daniels talking.
Because I can't believe in this universe we have a hut that sounds like Truman Capote.
Adam was just ranting about that 5 minutes ago. Where have you been?
I've been drinking.
This is the only way to get through the podcast, more or less the movie.
But that just, as soon as I heard him open his mouth, I'm like, oh my god, this is the Truman Capote of huts. I'm sure somewhere Philip Seymour Hoffman was watching this movie and just being like, that's not how you do it.
I hate you for making me edit that. Just stay away. It's not really worth it. So 4 out of 10 for me on the feature Clone Wars. Somebody's going to say something. Go ahead.
So with our 3 scores, should this review be called The Force Awakens?
I knew I shouldn't have gone to you. Let's talk about... go ahead. Somebody else.
Sorry, I'm laughing at the Jack Daniels coming through there. Sorry, I'm all for the Force Awakens. I was good with JJ doing it because I liked the reboot of Star Wars, that first one.
Star Trek?
Oh, boy.
Same fucking thing, and that's going to be my argument.
Oof, man, bit my... shot myself a little bit on that one.
Can you say that line again? Star Trek. Can you say that again?
I was good with JJ. I liked his reboot of Star Trek.